welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm a hopefully audible Andy.
So we're back in another preliminary final week, Andy. Our third in a row. I think, you know, the excitement of getting tickets. Well, the stress of getting tickets. So this year seems to have been slightly less of a debacle than others. Emails about grand final tickets. Like, oh my God, it's exciting and stressful.
It is. I wonder how many years of success we'll have before I still feel, you know, still like we're the battered underdog, because it still feels like that this is some sort of beautiful dream that's all going to be taken away and we're going to be finishing ninth again. Maybe sort of after 6 years of straight preliminary finals, appearances, I'll start getting entitled. But, I'm still just thrilled to be here. I'm going to be wearing Richmond gear to work all day, every day this week.
Everyone expects us to win. So doesn't make it work worse if we lose? Like,
of course it does. Makes it much worse. And to a team coached by Chris Scott, makes it awful.
Yeah, he's going to do the us against them. Nobody believed in us if they lose, which is remarkable because nobody does believe in them. They've got a chance. The betting line's about 18 points, which winning probability about 25-30%. So they've certainly got a chance. They finished on top of the ladder. They had the best percentage of any team in the league. They're a good football team. And just like the New England Patriots, they're going to be doing that. Nobody believes in us.
Yeah, and look, I guess when you're that betting line, you can, but and I am like rationally, we should win, but you know, at this end of the season, there are no bad teams, if you're playing a good team, we'll get to it in the preview. But I can easily see multiple ways we could lose this game. And I just like maybe I'm just sort of living on past glories, but I really want Friday night for us to feel like 2 years ago, like just a very intense pro Richmond crowd where the other team really feels the pressure that comes from the team and from the crowd. I don't feel like the sort of the scrappy underdog, that nobody believes in this team, as you say. But Nick, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Lots of other things have happened this week. What stood out to you? Well, actually, maybe we should start with the very sad news of Danny Frawley.
Yeah. So that news came after we recorded last week, and it was extremely sad news. And a week later, I don't think we've got much we can say that hasn't been said so eloquently by others. I thought the club official podcast did a really nice job of, you know, people speaking personally about what Danny Frawley meant to them. Years ago, we did an interview with Ray Hall where he said how Danny Frawley was his favourite coach and how much he believed in them and players and how they felt when they ran out. And, yeah, it was really sad.
It was. Look, the only thing, I've got nothing to add on the personal side, but look, I've always, even in amateur football, my own amateur football, I always define success, the definition of a successful season if you win a final, because it means in a sudden-death environment, you've taken on one of the best teams and you've beaten them. Now, obviously, true success is winning a grand final, but in most leagues, you don't do that in most years. Most leagues, you have a 1 in 16 chance or a 1 in 20 chance. So winning a final to me is really the definition of success. And because of that, Danny Frawley held the title belt of most successful Richmond coach between 2001 and 2017, which is a 15-year title reign. So, you know, I think because, of course, towards the end of his, it didn't end well with Richmond, as it usually doesn't with most coaches. We sort of focus on that. But I think overall, not to be forgotten, that that was actually a reasonable period of success and quite a fun team for a while.
It was a fun team. It was, as often when teams fail at the end, it's the recruiting that lets them down. It's trading away high draft picks for Craig Bittescombe and Rory Hilton. The year our top draft pick, James White, never plays a game of senior football. Mark Dragosevich's injury. Like, there's a whole late 90s generation of players who we love to, you know, they bought, you know, they had the mini refresh, getting Brad Ottens in, so you've got that the skyscraping forward line, you know, the big man department with Richo, Ben Holland, and yet, you know, the talent stops coming in, and yeah, I really think he was let down by the talent and the trades rather than the team not playing for him anymore.
I think that's true. I think actually, if you looked at it, there was probably in the big man department, we had enough to win a flag. The problem was we didn't recruit the right smalls. But such is life and history. You know, it's very sad, but as you say, there's not much more that can be said. But there's been plenty of other news of a less existential nature. Well, what sort of stood out to you?
Look, the one that was clearly the saddest news, I think the news we had been looking for was Shea Bolton re-signing for 2 more years. I would have happily done a third. I think we're on record as extremely pro-Bolton. And Paddy Nash announcing a 2-year contract extension as well, which I think is a good vote of confidence for him. He's had a great season in the VFL. He's had a little look at his debut versus Geelong and doing some research on the Cats, and he had a nice game. Like, I think he's probably frustrated he hasn't played more senior football, but yeah, 2-year contract gives him a nice base.
Yeah, these are the guys you got to keep. They're young, they're talented. We're going to lose some talent at the end of the year. We might lose Brando. We might lose we will lose Brando almost certainly. We might lose Camden. We've got to keep these guys on the team to, you know, be the next people up because they're talented and they have genuine upside. They're not just going to be at their best, they won't just be role players. They'll potentially be top 10 and the best and fairest players. So great that we kept them. And even I can muster up the enthusiasm for their re-signing without doing my customary complaint about not knowing what the dollars were.
Yes. One thing I'm feeling a bit smug about is that a year ago we talked about why Callum Coleman-Jones got a contract through the end of 2021, which seemed a lot. When, you know, he'd played about 11 VFL games last year and seemed a mile away from senior football. But, yeah, we speculated there might be interest coming from the South Australian clubs as their ruckman got older. And, yeah, there's a media report this week of the Crows sniffing around to see if he's interested in coming home.
I'd give him 3 years now. He looks like a footballer in the VFL. His body will be huge. You know, he's still filling out, and he's just a baller. He can play football. So he may never be a dominant player, but because he's just a bit short, as we know. But yes, I'm not surprised the Crows are sniffing around, and well, I certainly hope that we're not in the slightest bit entertaining it, but sort of to go back to the point of this is one of the reasons why I don't particularly like keeping as many rucks around the same age as we have, because you've got to play them all in the VFL and they've got to get experience, but surely we'll keep him because he's the best of our of our young talents as a ruckman.
Oh, look, I would have thought Barmy's approach would be sort of out of my cold, dead hand. Yeah. I think that you know, you have to have some depth, as we've seen this year, because we've played all of them as senior rucks. You know, the Chole is more of a forward ruck. Bolton seems ticketed to be a key back at some stage. Yeah. And we really like him, and he wins the ball a lot, and is an effective ruckman and a decent shot for goal. Like, yes, there's a lot to work with.
There's and we're going to use it or lose it. Not this year, obviously, but in future years. Because if he doesn't play 5 to 10 senior games next year, and considering if he's upward, I'm presuming that next year he's going to dominate the VFL. I'm not saying, you know, that's what I expect watching him now. He's not a dominant player, but I think he'll get really good next year. He has to play senior football next year, presuming his natural improvement curve continues.
He is appearing in the bests much more regularly now than he used to, which is very encouraging. Wanted to mention Monique Conti. Came second in the VFLW best and fairest. Notable for polling 16 votes in her 7 games. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it is.
You know, the challenge of her balancing a professional basketball career as well. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing her play in AFLW. Really looking forward to them announcing when they're going to have a season. But oh well, that's another topic. Last one, off field for me. Sam Lonergan got signed as I think it's a development coach type role. People probably remember him briefly for his Richmond career, but he's more notable for his time at Essendon. And what people may not know was that he was sort of one of the more low-profile casualties of the doping scandal, and he lost his job coaching Launceston Football Club, his old, you know, childhood club. He went back there to coach, moved his family. That was his job for the year, and then he was banned. And it was players like him that I very much, you know, I really felt they were lost somewhat in all the noise of the scandal, but of just what the human impact of all of this. And I'm really glad it hasn't affected it. Maybe it slowed down his career a little bit, but, you know, he's gone from Launceston to Woodville West Torrens, and now he's come to the AFL. He's still a relatively young man, and, you know, the opportunity is there, because, you know, it's a bit the Ben Rutten spot. So we've proven we can develop coaches.
You know, I would just apropos of that, the other day I was chatting to a doctor who was new to Australia, who didn't know anything about the Essendon saga, and I described what happened, just the, you know, very simply that they injected all these drugs and they don't have any record of what happened, and they couldn't believe how light the penalties were. So, you know, just remember that next time your Essendon-loving relative is saying that they were hardly done by. If anything, they're probably lucky to still exist as an organisation.
Yeah, but the email's coming that's going to clear Herd any day now.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and, you know, Herd is just one of many. I don't like to... So, VFL, Nick. It was pretty exciting. Pretty exciting.
Yeah. Looked pretty exciting.
Well, it was, you know, another big comeback. It wasn't so much a comeback as sort of a tight, you know, scores tight into the third quarter, lovely sunny Melbourne spring day, finals football in the VFL. And Nick, you know, the crowd was hot. I don't know if it came across on the TV, but it was quite quite sort of chippy in an old school way. Like, there was lots of banter going back between Richmond and Port for fans in the outer. Like, I stood in multiple spots, and almost every spot there were cranky old men getting stuck into each other in a sort of jovial way. If you didn't know that they weren't really taking it seriously, you would have thought it was actually quite confrontational. But then you'd sort of see at the end of the game how none of it was really serious. But yeah, like there was chippy, there was banter, there was a lot of sort of because you could hear every insult, but there was a lot of talk flying back both ways. And I actually saw at one stage, I was just, I threw a can out and I was standing near Neil Baum. And a couple of guys were getting chippy, calling Richmond cheats for a free kick. And Baum told them to settle down. And I don't know whether they pretended not to hear them. And I don't know if they didn't hear him, or they knew who it was who told them to settle down and they didn't want to acknowledge it because they knew it's Neil goddamn Baum. And you don't mess with Neil Baum, and also he has a somewhat large organization behind him. But funnily enough, their behavior did improve after that moment.
He's a big man, Neil Baum. Old now, but yeah.
Yeah, and you know, everyone who's a football fan has seen the highlights. Anyway, he didn't do it. Neil certainly wasn't threatening them, don't get me wrong. It was just a nice little moment. He just told them, you know, to speak a bit more respectfully when they're barracking supportively for their beloved Port Melbourne.
And, oh, bless.
Yeah, for something. Yeah. Anyway, it was a fun, beautiful day in the afternoon, and I think you know, Port have some players. It was a reasonably high standard of footy, I reckon.
Economy energy, best on ground.
Yeah, and look, sort of. I think that is the lead, and you know, I'm not sure we've discussed it on the pub, but I'm sure we've mentally all delisted Connor Menadue. But, what if Nick Brandon Ellis goes? Do you keep Connor around for one more year on a prove it contract?
If I'm him, I'm trying to get a contract somewhere else. I think I've played enough VFL, and if there's a I think you've got a Sammy Lloyd.
Yeah, maybe. I always had a thing for Connor.
I know.
I was out on Corey quite early, but Connor, I just like his athleticism. I love players who break the lines. And he plays well late in games when people are tired. Yeah, he just looks like an AFL player. He stands out. You know, there are some guys who don't look like AFL players playing VFL who are on our senior list, or you know, spent 8 years on our senior list or whatever it was. Connor looks like he's an AFL player, as does Paddy Nash at times too, as does CCJ. And just to talk about the game as a whole, it really did feel like in the last quarter it was the AFL listed players who took over. I actually felt a bit sorry for Port because it just felt like there's an awful lot of well-paid, well-drilled guys out there just running harder and longer in the last quarter.
Yeah, Paddy Nash had a couple of nice goals. Mabi Achol popped up. We just had that extra, you know, layer of class or, you know, gear to go to. Yeah, look, they played really well. Some people liked Marlon Pickett's game in the last quarter.
Yeah, it was the same as the week before, wasn't it? That he played well. He played well when the game was sort of in the balance. But it's not a four quarter effort, is it?
No, he does cruise a bit. His stats are decent and certainly cracking in tackle wise, but. Yeah, I mean, frankly, we had one player get more than 20 disposals. Tells you that, A, it was an even, partly even performance, partly just, you know, very scrappy game of football. Actually, while we are talking about last quarter goals, we'd be remiss not to mention people's champion, Oleg Markov.
Yes, the People's Republic of Markov was declared at Port Melbourne. It was fun. There were a couple of good goals. And, you know, Port Melbourne is, if any place was to be a become a socialist collective ruled by the committee, the commentariat, I think Port Melbourne will be the suburb that would happen. There's lots of big CFMEU signs up around the grounds. But it was a fun game, wasn't it? But, you know, I sort of wonder, can he become a Gary Rowan type? Again, I'm struggling to let go of Markov because I think he's got AFL level athleticism, but maybe he's another one who needs to try somewhere else as well.
So he's under contract, so it's a lot. It'd have to be a mutual thing, whereas Menadue can really seek his options. We're 10.5-point favourites versus Williamstown. So we're trying to work our way through some really traditional VFA clubs to win the grand final. Williamstown have beaten Western Bulldogs and Essendon to get here, so they're trying to work their way through some high profile AFL teams. I reckon it's going to be another good game. They've got the perfect VFL ruckman, a guy called Nick Meese, who's 197 centimetres, 103 kilos. You know, been a really good VFL ruckman for a long time. On the weekend, you know, we talked about Essendon's VFL ruck. Meese has had 25 disposals and 70 hit-outs.
Interesting. The thing is, like, we do have a lot of assets in the ruck. You know, we have two AFL listed guys in Chol and CCJ beating down the ruckman, and then just to be bastards, we throw Noah Bolter into, you know, at the start of the second half or something like that, and you know he jumps 10 feet in the air and goes over the top. So, you know, for God's sake, you know, we might not dominate, but we should be winning the ruck matchup, shouldn't we?
You'd think so. Although, yeah, as I said, Williamstown been beating other people up with their ruckman. They've got, I mean, they are a little bit like Port Melbourne. They've got a lot of, oh, that guy, like Mitchell Hibbard was a second round draft pick 4 years ago, washed out with North Melbourne. You know, big bodied midfield utility. He's been playing really well. Ben Kennedy, who was a first-round draft pick by the Pies a while back. A couple of ex-Coburg players who I remember from when they were our affiliate in Willie Wheeler and Lee Masters. Kane Lambert's best mate and Adam Marcon.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so it's... again, it's a mature midfield. They got a big-bodied inside mid called Liam Hunt, who's had a really good season for them. So, you know, it's sort of a mix of sort of younger, more talented guys versus older, more experienced, you know, guys wanting another crack, or you know, this is the top of their level. And you know, this is the game of their lives. Like I think it's going to be a really big game.
Nick, are we the dark overlord of that no one likes? Are we the New England Patriots of the VFL?
Yeah, I think so.
Except we never win, but you know.
Yeah, we haven't won yet. Look, I think playing at Punt Road doesn't suit us. I think you know we've recruited a team. The one game we had at the MCG, just how noticeable it was, because what Noah Bolter looked like in was more space to run around.
You could notice at the Port game that we tried to play the knock on hand pass scramble ball that we, you know, sort of the 2018 game plan, which is sort of our base game plan in the seniors, which we tack off now because other teams are playing on it. But it didn't work at all at the Port Oval because it's just too small, and because it's the footy in VFL is more contested, there's more guys around the ball, and it just doesn't work as well. How do you think it'll go at Icon Park?
Oh, I thought it was at Marvel.
No, it's at Icon.
Yeah. I have trouble.
As long as the VFL as long as the VFL app is correct, which, you know, as we know, we both has been discussed on this podcast before with much entertainment for our users, that the VFL app is quite good.
Yes. I think it's pretty neutral. I don't know. I may well have to get over this for the AFLW, but I just still have loathing from having lived near the ground and having seen streets full of smug Carlton supporters. So I think it's small but not tiny. Wait, I think
it's long, if you remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not a terrible place to watch football, but I hear you. Like, I have to walk into Carlton, which, admittedly, there is quite a good bakery near my house that is in Carlton. So, I'm not completely hardlined about this. But, yeah, there's sort of the vague stench of John Elliott will never be washed out of that ground for me.
So, yeah, I have to admit I can't get the mental image of us. Actually, was it a Jordan Peele sketch where the two comedians are wearing Nazi uniforms and they're like, are we the baddies? Like, we're wearing, like, Death's Head badges. Like, I think we're the baddies. So I can't quite get that out of my head now. But, yeah, I have to sort of shrink back down to, you know, who's involved with the VFL program. You know, I think Craig McRae, Xavier Clark, I think they've got really good personnel around the VFL team, and they coped well during the injury crisis in the middle of the year. Yeah, it'd be really nice for them if we won. Plus, you know, Steve Morris, premiership player.
So speaking of deeply unlikable evil empire teams, Nick, Geelong will never stop being the bad guys for me.
No, if it's not... I don't think as a team they're particularly unlikable. I think we're all a bit sick of Joel Selwood getting...
Oh, yes. He's the only guy I don't like on the team anymore. Mm.
Yeah, no. Hawkins I don't find very likable.
I think he's actually... Now he's rubbed out, I can say this. Like, aside from... Okay, so he hasn't been in great form lately, but if you look at his season as a whole, he thoroughly deserved that All-Australian selection. Like, he's been killing it statistically, you know, with his score involvements.
Yeah, and contested marking. Look, they're... the incessant whining about playing at the MCG aside, like, they've had such a successful season. They finished clearly on top of the ladder. You know, they were by far the best team of the first half of the year. Their second half of the year hasn't been as good, but for the whole season, they haven't conceded more than 95 points in any game. You know, they've had Tom Stewart, who I think as Richmond supporters were a little bit ho-hum about, because in our mind's eye, he's still getting fended off by Dusty, but he's finished third in kicks per game, sixth in marks and metres, sixth in intercepts. Like, he's had a monster season. He's, dare I say it, more offensive, but he's been their Dylan Grimes for them. He's had a great season. And they've beaten a good West Coast Eagles team without either Dangerfield or Ablett being particularly influential, especially again compared to earlier in the season. But Zach Guthrie played really well against the Eagles, played really well against against us last time, although, as I think we'll discuss, there's only so much that you can take away from that game. But, yeah, it's still a good team.
They're still good.
Yeah. They're clearly the number one contested possession team in the AFL, and really number one tackling team in the AFL. Actually, their opponents also get a lot of tackles. Like, we had 28 more tackles than them last time just because we were chasing them all day. Like, when they play well, they're They win the ball a lot. They dispossess the other team, and then sort of they suffocate teams. They don't. It feels like you don't ever get the chance to get the ball in space.
Yeah. So in some ways, they're the opposite to us. And Nick, I was a bit disturbed looking at the stats from the West Coast final, is that they're doing a bit of a Richmond 2017, is that they've sort of got a somewhat, they're flogged in the hitouts, but it doesn't matter because they're compensating through other means. And I don't like seeing that because it's a very efficient way to play, as we know. So it's going to be really interesting this week when we're going to throw two rucks again at Geelong, and they're going to play one ruck who's probably not as good as either of our two. What the net result on the clearances and contested possessions are.
Reece Stanley was a problem for Soldo last time. I had a moment early in the game where I thought, oh, he's a lot more athletic. Obviously, Soldo now is a lot more confident player than he was then. But yeah, it was a thing.
True. I mean, he did sort of. We'll see it. I know it's hard for me to count anything from that game. I guess I mentally rubbed it out. But you know, the hitouts against West Coast were 14-43. Surely that can't be replicated against. Surely that can't be turned around to such an extent against us.
No, but it didn't. Their midfielders, you know, they just played to a losing ruck, and as you said, we've seen how that can play out. Another lesson of 2017 Richmond is that you can rebuild your small forward brigade pretty quickly. They've done so with Kieran Myers, Quentin Narkle, and Luke Dalhouse. Coming into the team. And there was not last week, obviously, but I don't pronounce his name out. Ragtualoa. I thought he was their best forward versus Collingwood. Like, he's a big athletic boy who if he gets to run and jump at the ball, that is a problem for Dave Asprey.
Yeah, absolutely. It does sort of change things. In the category of worrying about everything, I think having a forward line where you haven't, you know, you don't have tape on it, sort of the structure will be unpredictable. I think there's often teams, and I just know this from watching Richmond a lot, that we often, our scoring doesn't dip the 1 week where the week straight after you lose a key forward, because often teams find more creative ways to score.
Rational brain me has left the building, to be quite honest. I'm already thinking about how upset I'll be if we lose, just all that feelings of how devastated the loss to Collingwood was, about the Chris Scott press conference, just all of it. And what a Collingwood Geelong grand final. That game wasn't fun to watch a couple of weeks ago. A Geelong GWS grand final, I could cope with even less. You might be able to buy tickets for that game from scalpers at face value. So it's all there. And I can't help but think about how bad it would be if we lost. But also I can't, we've got Dusty.
Yeah, and that's a key point. Either the fact that we have a habit of breaking teams in high-pressure games is that they eventually fold, they eventually crack in the third quarter. And B, like, our top-end talent. Nick, we have Dusty, we have Tom Lynch, we have Jack Ringwald. We have Daniel Rioli, who kicks goals in big finals. This is a kick-ass forward line. We've got George Costanza. Oh, no, sorry. we've got elite top-end cutting-edge talent. These guys are going to finals. I have faith. I know it's possible that we will lose, but we have a fully operational Dustin Martin Death Star. We didn't in last year's final series, and we know what that does in finals. Trent Cotchin, I think, will be a cameo player, not crucial, but he may still have one brilliant act of skill that kicks a crucial goal. We've still got Shedder. We've still got Lambert. I just think our midfield bats too deep, and I think we've got too many.
Presti has had a great season. Grimes all Australian.
Yeah, like I just believe, like we know our backline's awesome, and I just believe we bat deep enough in the midfield, and we've got enough guys who can kick special goals. And you know, I haven't even mentioned Shai Bolton, who you know started the you know his marking set up the goal, shed a goal, broke up in the Brisbane final. I just think we've got enough guys who can break the game off and score goals, and I think we've got enough midfield that can keep it tight when it needs to be and run harder and longer.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
D. Martin, 3 votes.